Okay, so we're recording. It's April 14th, 2018. And welcome to Narcisse Street. And we're looking at numbers 417 to numbers 510 this morning. And I'll open in prayer. Lord, thank you for bringing us here. Thank you for your perfect timing. You always show up at the right time in our lives. And we can be confident in that relationship, in that love that you have for us. We ask that you would guide us now and speak to each one of us individually in your own way. And may your word be a sword that cuts into our hearts and exposes what needs to come into the light, but also will heal us and purify us. In your name we pray. Amen. So let's go to Numbers 4. And maybe we'll start here with Gemma, and we'll go around the table and just start reading a few verses. And we'll read the whole section. Right. If you're an English reader, you know, if it's easier for you, then you can read it. If you don't want to read, it can pass. It's not, no pressure.
Starting at 17, right?
Yeah.
Then the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron and said, "Do not cut off the tribe of the families of the Kohathites from among the Levites, but do this in regard to them, that they may live and not die when they approach the most holy thing. Aaron and his sons shall go in and appoint each of them to his service and his task, but they shall not go in to watch while the holy things are being covered, lest they die." Don't we read that last week? Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Also take a census of the sons of Gershon, by their father's house, by their families, from 30 years old and above, even to 50 years old. You shall number them all who enter to perform the service to do the work in the tabernacle of meeting. This is the service of the families of the Gershonites, in serving and carrying. They shall carry the curtains of the tabernacle and the tabernacle of meeting with its covering, the covering of badger skins that's on it, the screen for the door of the tabernacle of meeting, the screen for the door of the gate of the court, the hangings of the court, which are around the tabernacle and altar, and their cords, all the furnishings for their service, and all that is made for these things, so shall they serve.
All the service of the Gershonites, whether carrying loads or for any other work, will be at the direction of Aaron and his sons. He will assign them all their tasks as their responsibility. This is the service of the families of the Gershonites concerning the tent of meeting. Their responsibilities will be under the authority of Itamar, son of Aaron the priest. The service...
Now take a census of the clans and families of the Merarites, division of the Levite tribe. Count all the men between the ages of 30 and 50 who are eligible to serve in the tabernacle. Their duties at the tabernacle will consist of carrying loads. They will require to carry the frames of the tabernacle, the crossbars, the pillars with their bases, the posts for the courtyard walls with their bases, pegs, cords, accessories, and everything else related to their use. You must assign the various loads to each man by name. So these are the duties of the Merarites at the tabernacle. They are directly responsible to Ithamar, son of Aaron the priest.
And Moses and Aaron, and the chiefs of the congregation, list the sons of the Kohen by the family and the father's houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old. Everyone who could come on duty for service in the tent of meeting. And those listed by family were 2,750. This was the list of the family of the Kohen, all who served in the tabernacle, whom Moses and Aaron list according to the commandment of the Lord by Moses. Those listed are the
generation
by their clans and their fathers' houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old. Everyone who could come on duty for service any time at meeting. Those listed by their clans and their fathers' houses were 2,630. This was the list of the clans of the sons of Gershon. All who served in the tents of meeting, whom Moses and Aaron listed according to the commandment of the Lord.
Those lists of the clans of the sons of Merari by their clans and their father's house, from 30 years old up to 50 years old. Everyone who could come on duty or service in the tents of meeting. Those lists by clans were 3,200. This was the list of the clans of the sons of Merari, whom Moses and Aaron list according to the commandment of the Lord by Moses.
All those who are listed in the Levites, whom Moses and Aaron and the chiefs of Israel listed by their clans and their father's houses, from 30 years old up to 50 years old, everyone who could come to do the service of ministry and the service of charity for the intent of the king. Those listed were 8,780. According to the commandment of God and Moses, they were listed, each one had a task of serving or caring. Thus, they were listed by him as the Lord commanded Moses.
And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, command the children of Israel that they put out the camp every leper, and every one that has the issue of the leper is defiled by the dead. Both male and female shall be put out. Without the camp shall be put them, and they shall defile not their camps in the midst whereof they dwell.
The Israelites did this. They sat them outside the camp. They did just as the Lord had instructed Moses. The Lord said to Moses, say to the Israelites, when a man or woman wrongs another in any way, and so is unfaithful to the Lord, that person is guilty.
He must confess the sin which he has committed, and he must make full restitution for his guilt. Add 20% and give it to the victim of his sin. But if the person has no relative to whom restitution can be made for the guilt, then what is given in restitution for guilt will belong to Adonai, that is, to the Kohen, in addition to the ram of atonement through which atonement is made for him. Every contribution which the people of Israel consecrate and present to the Kohen will belong to him. Anything an individual consecrates will be his own, to allocate among the Kohenim, but what a person gives to the Kohen will belong to him.
So, how would you kind of summarize what we just read? It was a lot of stuff, but what are some things that...
It's all ordered.
It's all ordered.
You know what you're saying?
It's why it's named Numbers in the Greek, because there's a lot of numbers and a lot of structure, right? So that's the big picture. What's more specifics that come from this? What do we learn?
It's all the families of Levi and all their specific duties within the tabernacle when it moves.
Yeah. If you passing out the sheet here, and maybe we can look at it. Might help the discussion here. Everyone, I don't know, they might have to share, but you can see in what, so the first, no, it's a different word, yeah, yeah, Kahath. So is everyone... See, Sharon, you're...
I don't.
Okay. Wait, I mean, you don't, if you're not. You can... Sharon's got it memorized. So the first thing is, like last week, let me ask this question. What did you look at last week with Sharon? Do you remember? Obviously, it's the previous verses. What?
With
which clan you say?
Yeah, why don't you go ahead and say what you talked about last week?
Was the Kehatim.
Right, okay.
Carrying the Holy of Holy stuff.
So you have here, let's see, Gershon. And you have, who's the next one here?
Kahath.
And then you have Merari.
Last week was mostly about Gershon, was it?
Yeah.
No, it was Kehat.
It was Kehat. Yes. Also, Gershon, it dealt with both of them, but the bulk of it was Kehat because that is what's dealing with the Holy, Holy articles.
Okay, so Sharon, summarize in 60 seconds. What was the whole situation with their clan?
They were the ones. Kehat. They could not see. Moses and Aaron, Aaron and his sons had to wrap up everything.
Right.
And it specified how to wrap it all up just as it was. The bread stays on the table, ready to go. And then the B'nai Kehat have to come in and carry it, and they're not allowed to touch it.
Okay.
And so it's a very risky job. It also finished by mentioning B'nai Gershon, that they were carrying the outside courtyard stuff.
Okay. So, how many clans are involved with the holy things of Israel? How many families?
According to this, three.
Well, are you sure?
Why is it just one?
No, I didn't mean just the holy things. I meant everything with the tabernacle.
Okay. Oh, carrying everything.
Well, just involved with the tabernacle.
Three?
Three.
Or?
Levi? Like how far back you go?
Or four.
Four with the Levites.
Right? Aaron's group, right? The sons of Aaron, B'nai Aaron. They're, even though, here's the tricky thing with, I know, we'll talk about it. But if you go and you look, if you look at, in chapter 4, or actually chapter 3, Numbers chapter 3, start at the very beginning. Now these are the records of Aaron and Moses when the Lord spoke with Moses on Mount Sinai. These are the names of the sons of Aaron. And everybody knows those. They're written down. Nadav, Avihu, Eleazar, and Itamar. These are the names of sons of Aaron, the anointed priest whom he consecrated to minister as priests. And then we know Nadav and Avihu died when they offered strange fire. And so then it came down to Eleazar and Itamar. So, verse 6, bring the tribe of Levi near and present them before Aaron the priest that they may serve him. And they were responsible for his needs. So, it then goes into verse 10. You are to appoint Aaron and his sons, and they will be responsible for their priesthood. But the unauthorized person who comes near must be put to death. So no Levite could actually go and do an offering, right? Only Aaron's sons could do offerings. Right. Or his descendants. So
it's understood to be descendants who could then get rededicated or something.
Right. But you have to come specifically from that line of the Levites. Not all Levites are
serve them.
You're right. Or the Lord or something like that. We'll talk about what Sharon just brought up here in a second. And so then it starts to talking about let's number the Levites. So go down to verse 17 of Numbers 3. These are the sons of Levi by their names, Gershom, Kohath, and Merari. These are the names of the sons of Gershom. And so this is where we have the clans, Gershom, Kohath, and Merari. And on your list, this is the strange thing, is who is descended from Kohath?
Amram.
And we all know who he is, right? Who is he?
The father of Moses.
The father of Moses. But I'll specifically put Aaron in there.
We have we talked about Dothan and Dothan and Abiram.
And they're descended from
Kehatim.
Ah, they're Kehatim. Okay, so.
So later on in the book, we're going to meet them, and they're the rebel crowd.
They're the rebels, and then from Aaron, we're going to have two lines, two main lines, because the first Nadab and Abihu died, and you're going to have the two lines of. Priests, kind of competing priests that come out.
Are they necessarily competing though?
Well, I guess it depends how you interpret the history.
No, I mean later on, but.
Right. So, Eleazar has Phinehas, and we all know who he is, right?
Good.
He's the guy with the javelin or. What was the word?
Spear.
Yeah, but in Hebrew.
I don't remember.
Anyways, he had that stick thing, spear, that he jabbed through the man and the woman. I believe it was an Israelite man.
Yeah,
a Midianite woman who were.
Sleep wrestling.
Yeah, they were wrestling together.
Yes,
they were sleeping
part
together.
Part of some fertility act.
It was a fertility act. And so he became well known in the annals of Israel's history. And Phinehas, down below, you're going to have Sadduk. And this is where we get the word Sadducee from. You know Sadducees? Pharisees, Sadducees, all that stuff.
Righteous.
But Sadducees are coming from that high priestly line, right? That's why they care so much about keeping the first five books of the Torah. It's part of, because the priests, if you remember from Deuteronomy, are supposed to, they're the teachers of the people. If you go to Nehemiah and Ezra, they're not Nehemiah, but Ezra, he's the priest and he's teaching the people from Torah. So, anyways, Sadduk is the line, and he's the one who's going to be connected with David.
It's a whole map. It's a whole map that he's holding.
Okay,
it's a sword. It's kind of a sword. Yeah.
So, all the time, the prophets will talk about David and Sadduk as being, you know, these exemplars of the king and the priest. Of this is the future of, in a prophetic way, I guess. And Itamar is interesting because from him comes Eli. Who is he? He was the priest connected to Ashilo, and he was connected to who?
Samuel.
Remember Samuel? Yeah, and from his line, you have Achimelech and Avital. And what's so famous about these guys? Which king?
David.
Well, Saul, right? Remember?
Yeah,
Saul was chasing David. Saul was king.
But Abiathar is friend of David.
Right. But Achimelech, he's the one that Saul killed, right? Anyways, Saul, when Saul becomes the first king, this is who the high priests are. It's only later that David breaks from Abiathar. I believe it's because he was disloyal to him at some point, connected with Absalom. Anyways, we'll have to double check on that, because I don't have all my political history down. But anyways, it's interesting. What is strange about this? Because right now we're focusing on three. This is, you know, it was a trick question. How many are involved with the tabernacle? And so you say three because that's how it's laying it out.
It seems like the other two clans don't have anyone.
Well, not just that, but it seems like this is a sub-clan, the sons of Aaron, and yet they're descended from Kahath.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird.
Because it makes a distinction. Last week we looked at that, where there's a distinction between Aaron and his sons that they
go in and wrap up all the holy of holies, but the Kehatim can't.
Mm.
Yeah.
And yet they are themselves Kehatim. So it sounds like they're separate somehow.
So I would say there's four fractions here that are connected to the Holy of Holies, the tabernacle, the holy stuff.
And so you're saying there was a pronouncement against the Kehatim, but it doesn't sound like if Aaron does get to continue doing certain things, it wasn't all inclusive.
Yeah. So which pronouncement are you talking about? You're talking about here in chapter 4 against the Kehatim?
Yeah.
So what's the pronouncement?
What did it say?
Well, it's not against them. It's just
it's a warning.
To see or touch the holiest things.
What did we read? What did we read in last week in verse 15? 4:15. Sorry. Now go to chapter 4 of Numbers. Chapter 4.
But they are not to touch the holy things so that they won't die.
So these are things of the tabernacle meeting which the sons of Kohath are to carry. The Kohath are the carriers, but they're not allowed to watch while the stuff is getting wrapped up.
And also in verse 15 it says, don't touch, right? So who's supposed to touch and who's supposed to wrap up? Which people? Aaron's sons, right? Aaron's sons. And then the Kohatim are supposed to carry. Right.
Abimelech and Abiathar are famous, as I've never heard of them. I mean, they're not really big figures, are they?
Well, they were in the politics of Saul and David.
Yeah, if you read Saul and David, they're always involved.
Oh, are they?
It's,
maybe I didn't know which is which or something.
Yeah, and Jesus quotes when it's in Mark, I think, and he's plucking the grains, or his disciples are doing it, you know, up in the Galilee, I think it is. And, you know, somebody says to him, you know, you're breaking the Shabbat.
Right.
And then Jesus quotes the whole thing about, where is it? It's in, let's see.
Where David goes in the temple.
He needs food. David's hungry, and he eats the priest. He preaches the priest bread. Anyways, he mentions
Abimelech is my brother is king, right?
No, my father.
Abimelech.
Oh, Achim. Right.
My father, my brother is king.
Yeah.
Who is his brother?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and I see Abiathar right there.
Yeah.
Because
who's his brother? Who's he talking about there? When he gets named there.
It could just be a name, you know.
Some other entry.
Yeah. Okay, so so let's clarify here. We got our three main clans. So we know Kahat, they're the ones carrying the holy stuff. Gershon, what are they carrying? That we just read this morning. Yeah, which is his? They carry all the trappings of the tent.
The tent, the curtains, the poles.
Yeah. And then.
So I've lost it. Wait a minute. So the Gershonites are the carriers.
Everybody's a carrier.
Everybody's a carrier. They carry different things.
They carry different things.
Right.
Kahath is carrying the holy vessels, the things that we usually know about, right? The things inside the tabernacle. The vessels. The Gershonites are carrying the curtains, the hangings, the ropes. And the Merarites are carrying, it seems more like the skeleton or the structure. The posts, the crossbars, the pegs. And all of this is specifically listed in Numbers 3. So Gershom is numbers 3:25-26 for the specifics. The Merarites are 3:36-37, and Kahath is 3:31-32. So let's read the three Haftarot today, the three prophets. Okay, go to Isaiah 48. And I'll just read them for time's sake. I'll start in verse 9. For the sake of my name, I hold back my anger. For the sake of my praise, I restrain myself from destroying you. Look, I have refined you, but not as silver. I have purified you in the furnace of misery or affliction. Who's God talking about here? For the sake of my name. Yeah, if you keep reading, you'll see he's talking, says, listen to me, O
Eyes of Jacob, yep. Called by the name of Israel.
Right. But it's interesting here, just to point out, for the sake of my name. Some of your translations might have reputation there or other things. But Israel, actually, you remember, has God's name inside of it. And Israel's been called by God. For the sake of my name, I hold back my anger. If you were just to kind of glance at that chapter of 48, what's the situation with God and Jacob and Israel? I guess, what's the typical story in the Bible regarding God? What's the relationship between God and Israel? If you read the Bible through from the beginning to end, what's the story that we always hear?
He chooses them, they forsake him, they rebel. He punishes them, he loves them, they rebel.
And it's like this cycle, and they repent and they return, and so it's this constant relationship of forgiveness, and yet, you know, there's a calling, and you know, God says, how can I throw you away forever? You're my child. I've called you. That's just kind of the whole story of the Bible. So, okay, keep that in mind. Let's go to Zephaniah chapter 3. This is not a common prophet in most people's sermons.
Except the 3:17.
Zephaniah. So not Zechariah, but Zephaniah. Chapter 3. Zephaniah chapter 3. I'll start in verse 7. I thought, certainly you will respect me. Now you will accept correction. If she had done so, her home would not be destroyed by all the punishments I have threatened. But they eagerly sinned in everything they did. Therefore, you must wait patiently for me, says the Lord, for the day when I attack and take plunder. I have decided to gather nations together and assemble kingdoms, so I can pour out my fury on them, all my raging anger. For the whole earth will be consumed by my fiery anger. Know for sure that I will then enable the nations to give me acceptable praise. All of them will invoke the Lord's name when they pray and will worship him in unison. Again, sounds like the typical story of the Bible, right? You have you have Israel connected here, and she's again being corrected. In Isaiah 48, it said God put her through, you know, this furnace of affliction. And in Zephaniah 3, he's saying, you know, now you will accept correction. The same idea of being corrected for sins. And just since we brought up name in the last one, I do this for my name. What in verse 9, what did it say about God's name, the Lord's name?
I have, they will restore to the peoples a pure language, that they will all call on the name of the Lord to serve him with one accord.
And who will?
Israel.
Yeah, so
in Zephaniah, here in Isaiah, we have Israel, it seems, or Jacob, as it says. And then here you have Israel, the people, but then it seems to get bigger here with the Gentiles, the nations. And there's this thing of name with these. And then quickly, Isaiah 56.
Well, the other thing is funny, it kind of sounds like the reverse of the Tower of Babel.
Oh, sorry, one last verse. Yes, of all the nations coming back together.
Coming back together, but yeah. It specifically says, I will change them back into Safa Bula, a clear speech.
Right.
So that they're all going to call on the name of the Lord, and they're going to get together and work with a shared shoulder.
But yeah, and it has Echad.
Yeah.
Like
so
one.
It's a reverse of what happened with Babel. They were separated, and they couldn't work together anymore.
Yeah, exactly. So that's definitely an allusion back to the Tower of Babel. But in verse 10 of Zephaniah 3, just from beyond the rivers of Ethiopia, those who pray to me will bring me tribute. Okay, Sudan, but Cush in the Hebrew. Okay. Now, the last prophet, Isaiah 56, verse 5. This is a very famous verse. Isaiah 56, verse 5. I will set up within my temple and my walls a what?
Yad Vashem.
Yad Vashem. What do your translations have?
Monument.
A monument. Anything else? I can't hear you. Yeah, what will he set up in my house? Right. Yad Vashem. Everybody knows Yad Vashem here.
A place and a name.
A name and a hand. I give them power in the name.
Okay.
A name greater than sons and daughters.
It will be better than sons and daughters, and I will set up a permanent monument for them that will remain. Okay, so the word that's used for monument in that first one is Yad Vashem. And and then it says a permanent monument is Shem, it's Shem Olam. Okay, y'all know Hebrew. What is Shem?
Name.
Name, okay? So you'll see we have name here now, right? Isaiah 56, 5. And the whole idea of the name is... It's related, basically, a better translation is reputation, in some cases, where it's what your name means. It lacks, it has some
identity.
Type of, what?
Say identity.
Identity.
It's who you are, what you're known for.
Yeah. What are your characteristics? What is your legacy? Like specifically here in verse 5, you could say like a legacy, because today in Israel, in Jerusalem, we have Yad Vashem, which is for the Holocaust, and it's to give a memorial to all the people who died in the Holocaust, who in a sense were nameless, because they weren't known, and it all happened, but
your children carry on your name.
Your children carry on your name.
If you don't have children, it's like you are cut off.
Right.
And it's interesting because the focus of on Holocaust Memorial Day,
which was this last week, yeah.
Which is now, yes, to everyone there is a name. So there's a huge move always to name everybody. And then there was something new which came out this Holocaust Day. I can't remember now whether it was in the ceremony for Holocaust Day or whether it's the March of the Living. But the idea is to find out the real stories of everybody who died.
Right.
Even young people, children, whatever. What were their dreams? What were their ideas? What were their aspirations? You know, do three-year-olds want to be pilots? Whatever it happens to be. Mm-hmm. It's a way of carrying on the...
Who they are.
Yeah, carrying on the nation. To have a name is to have an identity. Yeah.
So, what's the connection back to Numbers, to our original passage? That's the question. In Hebrew, in verse 5, it says... We're still in Isaiah 56, verse 5. Oh, one last question. Who's going to get this memorial or this monument in the temple? Who are the people here?
The eunuchs.
The eunuchs.
Who keep his Shabbat and do what Jesus said.
So...
Who don't have a way of creating a legacy for themselves, for children.
But who are the eunuchs? What's their nationality? Are they Israelites?
No.
Israelites. Probably not, because it's forbidden to castrate somebody.
Unless it was done to them in exile.
Okay, right.
Or Romans.
But there's a good reason to think it's Gentiles here.
Verse 3, a foreigner joining Adonai.
Yeah, there's a context there of a foreigner joining, eunuch. There's a strong suspicion to think we're talking about Gentiles here. And anyways, it's funny that the Holocaust...
Eunuchs, they might have been a conquered Gentile?
Yeah, I mean...
Either the parallelism shows they're the same category or similar category, or they're similar in the sense that they're both excluded from worship of God. So that both the Gentile and the eunuch... outside, just like we read in Numbers.
Right.
They're outside the camp.
Yeah.
Right? The lepers.
So this brings up, I think you just said about eunuchs, they can't have children, and so they can't have a name. They can't pass on their legacy to their children, which they give a name to, like your last name or whatever it is, or what clan you come from. So going back to Kahath, which is where we were in Numbers, 4, in a second, in verse 5 it says, I will give you a Shem Olam that will not what? That will not be cut off. And this is a Yikaret. Hikrit is the typical word for like cutting off. You talked about cutting off in the last couple weeks, right? About what does it mean to be cut off from the people.
Yeah.
And so this is the word that ties it all together. Cut off. Okay. Because it says... It says back in Numbers 4 about Kahath, verse 18. Numbers 4, 18. Do not allow the tribe or the families of the Kahathites to be cut off. Takritu, al takritu et shevet mishpachot hakahati. Numbers 4, 18. Do not allow the tribe of the families of the Kahathites to be cut off from among the Levites, but in order that they will live, you know, do this and do this. If you look at all three of our prophets here, we saw it in Isaiah 56, verse 5, regarding the eunuchs. They will have this legacy that will not be cut off. Isaiah 48, verse 9. Says, for my name, I hold back my anger, and for the sake of my praise or prestige, I restrain myself. My translation has destroying you, but it's the same word here of cutting off. I restrain myself from cutting you off. Hakritecha. So it's the same word there. And then in Zephaniah 3:7, it's also the same word. Zephaniah 3:7. When it talks about her home, Ma'on, Velo Yikaret Me'ona. If she had done so, if she had received correction, her home would not be cut off. So it's the same word. Zephaniah 3:7.
Zephaniah 3:7, Isaiah 48:9, and Isaiah 56:5. This whole idea of cutting off, and I would argue in the bigger sense, your reputation or your identity or your legacy being cut off. Because like Aaron had, he had four sons, Nadav, Avihu, Eleazar, Itamar. What happened to these first two guys?
They were
killed.
They were cut off.
They were cut off.
They were cut off.
And so they have no descendants.
Right. We read that was in our last week's parasha, specifically saying they had no sons.
So they had no sons. They were cut off. Whereas Eleazar and Itamar, they did have some type of legacy that continued on.
So Eviatar, it doesn't say cut off, but Legaresh, he was expelled by Solomon because he had joined Adoniah and Yoav.
Okay, so it wasn't Avshalom.
It was Adoniah.
Yeah.
David's firstborn.
Can I ask, is it the same word in Isaiah 53:8?
Yes.
No one in his generation protested his being cut off from the land of the living to the crimes of his people.
I think that's Legaresh there.
Yeah. He was taken, right? Yeah, so it's a different one.
Oh, well, there's also Nigzar. It's another synonym.
So what we're saying is that the connection, even if it's not the actual word, in Crete.
It is.
What he was talking about is, I jumped to later, just the
Eviatar. You just pointed out.
No, that's different.
That was Negaresh, that's a different word.
All right. Yeah, so the connection between the two is this word cut off. And so the carrying of the order, the routine, the program, whatever you want to call it, for carrying the tabernacle, the who's to do what, if you don't do it properly, there is the risk that you will get cut off. Your sons won't, you won't.
Right.
Right? Is that what we're saying?
Sure.
Yeah.
Right. I guess the way I would summarize, bring all this to a head, is we all carry genes in us that have been passed through our parents, from the grandparents, for who knows how many generations. And it's not just the genes or the biological stuff that defines, you know, whether we have cancer or we have blue eyes or brown hair or all of that stuff, but there's also these spiritual genes, this reputation, this name that is passed on. And, you know, I'm not into the whole thing that you are defined by your ancestors and you have to break curses for everything. Because at the end of the day, you know, the Bible also says God holds the sons accountable. He doesn't hold you, like in the prophets in Ezekiel, that you make your own decisions and God deals personally with every person in the Gadol, you know, in the big picture. But there is some type of spiritual reputation that comes from our lives that we do pass on to our children. And hopefully, we hope. And obviously, we've taken stuff from our parents, for better or for worse. And some of that stuff we have to get rid of, you know, like break the curses or change patterns, you know, with the help of the Lord. But I think the ancient interpreters connected these three readings with Numbers 4. Kahath had this job to do, and in order that he wouldn't be cut off, he wasn't supposed to touch or to look at the holy things. He was only supposed to carry them. And he takes that kind of simple, practical command and brings it into a much larger web of meaning regarding, you know, Israel, the nations, the Gentiles, the eunuchs, people who don't even have a legacy to pass on or a reputation in a physical sense, and gives it this fuller meaning of in a spiritual sense. And so this is kind of more, it's kind of a bigger thing. What can I grab from this part and this part? But there's a lot of stuff here, I think, to bring in, to hold on to. And so we can't grab all of this right now, but there's something here I think any of us could take and use and apply to our lives.
Well,
and
it's interesting that the eunuch and the Gentile are not physically part of the people of God, or they, in some way, they've been cut off from service to God, right?
Yeah.
And yet, in Isaiah, he's saying, you still have a way to serve God. I'm going to make a monument in the temple for you. If you join the covenant, and
yeah,
if you, you know, keep the Sabbath, and basically show yourself faithful, there's still room for you, even though by the hard facts, you would be excluded.
So Sally, it's interesting you brought up Isaiah 53, and then you brought up the eunuch, because I want to end this morning in Acts 11.
I was going to say, good.
There it is. Just go to Acts 11 as we close.
Because there you have the Ethiopian eunuch, in other words, it's a Gentile eunuch, who is basically hungry for the word of God and doesn't know how to make sense of it.
That's right. Acts 11. Let's see. Did I just miss it? Wait. Okay, maybe, is it Acts 9? Acts 9? Or is it Acts 8? Sorry.
Yeah.
Acts 8, okay. Okay, so we'll end with this, and it kind of ties a lot of these strings together. Acts 8:26. The angel of the Lord said to Philip, "Go, get up and go south on the road that goes down from Jerusalem to Gaza." So he got up, he went there. He met an Ethiopian eunuch. You remember back in Zephaniah 3, we said God was going to bring Ethiopian beyond the Ethiopian into... He met an Ethiopian eunuch, a court official of Candace, queen of the Ethiopians, who was in charge of all her treasury. He had come to Jerusalem to worship. So this makes you think of Isaiah 56, that maybe he had converted to Judaism, or at least he was kind of a God-fearer, where, like Isaiah 56 says about eunuchs, you know, in Jerusalem. Anyways, he's reading. What's he reading? Isaiah 53. And so Philip said, you know, do you know what you're reading? He says, like, well, I need someone to help me. Verse 32, he was led like a sheep to slaughter, and like the lamb before its shearer is silent, so he did not open his mouth. In humiliation, justice was taken from him. Who can describe his posterity? Huh, that's interesting. Because, what's that?
Your name, your memory.
Yeah. What verse? That's Isaiah 53. I just saw this. Isaiah 53. Is it verse 8?
Wait, which one?
Yeah, verse 8. Okay. Wait, is that what? Okay, 7, 8. Oh, no, I think it's verse 7 for what I'm looking for here. Isaiah 53. Oh, no. Okay, sorry, we're like doing stuff on the run here. Who can describe his posterity or... Venea is in the Greek, and so like family origin. So it's very similar here, this idea of you're passing on your legacy, right? Your children and all this. For his life was taken away from the earth. Then the eunuch said to Philip, please tell me, who is the prophet saying this about, himself or someone else? And so he started to proclaim the good news about Jesus to him. And then he's baptized there in the water along the road. And so it's interesting because you have the prophets leading up to these Gentiles and these eunuchs basically coming into some type of relationship with God. And you essentially kind of see this fulfillment in Acts 9 in a very real way of a eunuch who has no children. Acts 8. A eunuch who has no children, no real legacy to pass on, but he does, like he has this spiritual legacy through the Lord that in God's eyes means just as much or more than what people normally think of when they think of, you know, what you leave behind regarding children or wealth or some type of, you know, monument of a statue of how great you were, because it's that Yad Vashem that's in the Lord's temple.
Yad Avshalom. He set up a pillar, right? Because he didn't have children.
Right.
So he wanted a monument, a memorial. Like that whole concept. You need something that lives past you to remember you.
Right. So I guess my final word is your legacy is important. Don't ever, you know, deride it or think it, because it's very important. And don't, you know, to your dying breath, keep that, remember that every little thing we do matters. So, Shabbat Shalom.